If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come.
Next, Amy Reynolds shares some tips, hints, experiences, and stories on simple country living, on Living Way Out Here.
Watch where you go and remember where you've been. That's the way I see living with simple man.
This is Amy, and this is my show, Living Way Out Here. It is Monday, April the 29th, and I'm glad you guys could be here, whether you're listening now or listening later. I appreciate it. I was planting flowers with my neighbor earlier today, and now it got windy. And now we have rain and thunder happening.
A fire going.
And so we have a fire in our wood stove right now because it's pretty chilly out there. And wood is the only thing that we use for heat. And so makes it nice and cozy, though. I like it. You know, I had a, when I lived in California, I had a furnace. And I don't know if it was normal for furnaces to do this, but, you know, it would get the house kind of warm. It was okay, tolerable. But it's like the heat never lasted, and it bugged me a lot. And then before the furnace would go off, it would blow cold air like an air conditioner. And I don't know if that was normal. I guess it was normal. Cope shaking his head, yes, that's normal. And that, what's with that? You get it all warm, and then before it goes off, it makes it cold again? That's irritating. And so I thought, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. So I wanted to get a wood stove. And so I shopped around, and their new ones were just stupid expensive. And so a friend of mine told me of someone that was moving, and they had two wood stoves in their house, and they had to remove one of them for whatever reason. I guess the new buyers that was buying the house didn't want it or something. So I went over and looked at it, and I liked it. It was a really nice one, big one, and it was nice. And so I ended up buying it from them. And then I had to find someone to install it. And so a friend of mine in church does construction. I didn't know Cope at the time, so he couldn't have done it. But I know he could have had I known him. But apparently, you know, our cross did not pass at that time. But
paths did not cross.
Huh?
Paths did not cross.
That's what I said. Yeah. That was it?
Our cross did not pass.
Did I say that? Our paths did not cross at the time. He said I mixed that up. I didn't even realize. Anyway, so I hired this guy to install it for me. And he told me that he would do it for, I think he told me he was going to install it for $150, I think is what he told me. And that was making the platform out of rock or brick to stand, you know, for it to stand, sit on, and then the brick up the wall and the whole thing. And $150 for that. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, that's doable. And then, so it took him a long time to finally get around to doing it. And I was getting irritated and I kept saying, hey, you know, you're going to be doing this. What's the deal? I can hire somebody else. And he's, no, I'll get to it. So he finally got to it. And, so I had it sitting in my garage. So he had to bring it into the house through my sliding glass door and got it installed, got the brickwork done and all that and everything. And he said, okay, well, that is, that's going to be $500. And I said, what? I said, no, you told me $150. And then he said, well, yeah, I know I originally told you $150. I didn't have anything written down. I didn't have anything at all. He said, well, yeah, I originally told you $150, but I had no idea that it was going to be so much work. And I had no idea that the stove was so big and all that. And I said, well, you know what? You told me $150, and that's what I budgeted, so that's what I'm going to pay you. And he was ticked off. He was irritated. But so what? I mean, he told me a price, right? And, you know, we didn't have any written contract. We didn't have anything like that. And so I paid him $150. But anyway, my story, I wasn't even going to talk about this, but my story, that kind of heat is amazing. It is amazing. The house stays warm, much better than a furnace. And then the wood stove doesn't blow out freezing cold air before it goes out. So anyway, I like wood heat. I'm just messing up all my words. I like wood heat better than furnace heat because it's so much better. Anyway. Okay, so there we go. How's that for an introduction to my show? So we're going to do birthdays. So if today's your birthday, April 29th, happy birthday. And you are celebrating Willie Nelson. Today's his birthday. How old do you think Willie is?
85.
He's 86. Very good. He was 85 yesterday.
Yeah. So you asked me yesterday, I'd have been right.
You would have been right. Yeah. And Jerry Seinfeld having a birthday today. Hilarious comedian. I love the Seinfeld show. He's 65 today. Michelle Pfeiffer, good actress. I like her. She's in good movies. Do you know who Michelle Pfeiffer is?
I remember the name. I don't remember who.
She's the one that's, I'm pretty sure it's her. She's the one that's in the Iron Man movies.
Oh,
his
yeah.
assistant.
Mm-hmm.
She's 61 today. And then had he been living, Dale Earnhardt, I know there's a lot of race car fans out there, he would have been having his birthday today. But he passed away 2001.
No, he died.
Oh, yeah, he died. He didn't pass away. He died. Anyway, Colt might talk about that later, what that's all about. So anyway, those are the birthdays today that I have. Those four, Willie Nelson, Jerry Seinfeld, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Dale Earnhardt. Just a couple of things that happened on this day in history in 2004. And I didn't know this, but 2004, Oldsmobile built its final car, ending 107 years of production on this day. And then in 1913, on this day, April the 29th, the first zipper was patented. So, there's those things that happen in history. Oh, and today, in case anyone's kind of late to celebrate, but the holiday for today, it's International Dance Day. So, the importance of dance, teaching dance, that kind of thing. I'm not much of a dancer. I never have. I've never even liked it. And, but I've got a friend. She is a dancing fool. She dances. She teaches line dancing, and she does any kind of dance. She listens to music, and she makes up her own dance to music, and then she teaches her made-up dance, and she loves it. She and her husband went on a cruise one time a couple years ago, and they did she even watches a Dancing with the Stars. She never misses that. She's big into that kind of thing. But she and her husband went on a cruise, and they had a Dancing with the Stars kind of competition on the cruise, and she won. How about that? Of all the people on the cruise that participated, she won. Her husband kind of likes to dance, she said, but not a whole lot. And so he didn't dance with her. There was some other guy that was her partner on the cruise, and so they danced together and they won. So anyway, that's a good thing for that. All right. I have Ripley's Believe It or Not. This one story, hopefully I'll be able to find it again, is it's an interesting story. It's, let me see if I can really quickly pull it up here. It's about war pigeons. And I've heard about them before, but I didn't know this much about them. And of course, you know, it's the whole computer. This thing is bugging me. Whole computer thing that I have problems with. So, let me see if I can find my story again. Because I didn't write it down, because, you know, shouldn't have to do that, according to some people. Okay. Dang, it's bugging me.
Is it Dale or Dale Jr.?
Dale, not Junior. It's Dale. It's his birthday today, if he was still living. Well, this is irritating. So, I can't find it. A second, maybe.
It'll show up.
Well, maybe. Thanks, by the way. Hold on. Um, Well, let me look again really quick. It was an interesting story. It's pigeons that were used during the war and why they were used and how they were used. And, of course, I'm not finding it. Oh, wait. No. No. So, we'll just forget about that because I'm a little bit irritated right now. So now, hopefully, I didn't lose my other stuff. But I will tell you some other Ripley's, believe it or not, things that I always do, kind of interesting stuff. And you know why I can do this right now? It's because I wrote this stuff down. That's why. The other stuff, no. And that's why I write everything down for this reason. I'm just trying now to get back to my place so I can get to my other stuff when I need it. But, of course, hold on here. Okay. All right, so the other Ripley's, believe it or not, stuff. You know, the Hass avocado, I love avocados. I love avocados. I mean, I love them on sandwiches. I love them on toast. I love them in salads. I love them by themselves. I love avocados. And
Sam I am.
Uh-huh. What?
Sam I am.
Cope doesn't like avocados. However, he loves guacamole. Go ahead and figure that one. Go ahead. Anyway, the Hass avocado was patented in 1935 by a California mailman. His name is Rudolph Hass.
Hass.
H-A-S-S. As a type of avocado you can buy. The good avocados. Well, he's the one that patented them in 1935 and he named them after himself. Another Ripley's, believe it or not, you can't make snowballs at the North Pole. Oh, no, at the South Pole because the snow is too dry. The coffee brand Chock Full of Nuts. Have you ever heard of that coffee brand?
Yep.
Okay, it does not contain any nuts. I don't know why it's called that, but anyway. You know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, all of the sweaters that he wore on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood were knitted by his mom, Fred's mom. Her name was Nancy. Every single sweater he wore. That's kind of cute. Emerging during the Tang Dynasty, more than 1,000 years ago, cricket fighting still occurs today in China.
Cricket fighting?
Cricket fighting.
Okay.
That's got to be riveting, don't you think?
Better get a front row seat.
Yeah, cricket fighting. You know, crickets fought. Apparently they do in China. Zelma George. There's a woman out there. Her name is Zelma George. She had the ability to write forward, backward, and upside down with both hands at the same time.
That's pretty talented.
That's way talented. I mean, I can barely hold a pencil with my left hand. And she, wow. And then, I'm not sure why this is like this, but there are more than...
Thank you, Pumpkin Cat.
What's Pumpkin Cat saying?
She don't like guacamole. Yeah, avocados either, but guacamole's okay.
Pumpkin Cat doesn't like avocados? Or guacamole?
Same as me.
She likes guacamole, but she doesn't like avocados. I don't get it. Guacamole is mashed up avocados. Has a little bit, I mean, some salt added to it. Anyway. And then the last thing, which is kind of a strange thing to me, but there are more than 100 genuine shrunken heads in the Ripley's Believe It or Not collection. What is the purpose of shrunken heads?
So they don't take up so much room in your head collection.
Why do people shrink heads? Don't say that again.
I don't think that's so true.
Did you not hear me?
Why would you want to store full-size
heads? Why do you want shrunken heads? What's the purpose of that? Why? Who shrinks him and why?
I can't tell you.
That's all you had to say. All right, so those are the Ripley's. That's my Ripley's Believe It or Not stuff for you for the night. I want to tell you some neat...
Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway. All right, this is a neat story here. There's this woman that, let's see, get her name. I don't know if her name really matters. Probably not. But anyway, Tinny Davidson. She lives in British Columbia. And the story says that she has been waving to children in her town for over a decade. She's 88 years old. Well, actually, she and her husband, when they moved to this house where they live in 2007, and it is not very far from, it's on the way to the local high school that kids have to walk by their house to, to go to school, to and from school, the high school. And so she and her husband thought that it would be kind of fun to sit by the front window inside their house and wave to these kids as they walked, these high school students as they walked to school. And then as they walked from school, they were out there again in their front by their front window, and they waved to these kids as they walked home. So she's been doing this for over a decade. Her husband passed away, and after he passed away, she continued to do this. She wanted to, she thought, you know, it makes her day, and she thought, well, it makes the kids' day too. So she thought then she would continue that. And she said that the kids were friendly, you know, they always waved back, and they were respectful, and they were nice, and this, it says here in the story that the kids decided to repay her kindness one year by giving her dozens of cards and gifts for Valentine's Day. I guess these kids just got together and say, hey, you know what, let's just do something nice for this lady. She's a nice lady, and she's now a widow, and let's just do something nice for her. And so they, a bunch of handmade cards, store-bought cards, gifts, and flowers for Valentine's Day they brought to her. So then she got the nickname of Waving Granny. And then the community heard that she was soon going to be moving to an assisted living place, now that she was on her own and needed a little bit more help. And so more than 400 kids gathered in her front yard to say goodbye to her. How cute is that? I think that's really cute. So that she said that she cried tears of joy. The kids collectively blew her kisses, gave her hugs, and waved farewell to her. Because they knew that she was going to be moving. So I thought that's really cute. There's a little video of it and everything. And front yard, bunch of kids in their front yard waving to her and just being sweet. So I thought that's a really cute story. I like it. There's another story here of a... I don't know if I should do this one later after my break or not. Maybe I'll do it now. This is also a story of a widow.
Which a widow is, what?
And hold on. This is why I'm going to start writing stuff down. This is really, really bugging me. Okay. Wait for this story now to come up because it takes forever. Had I written it down, I could just zoom right through it. Okay, there's this, story comes out of Alabama. I said a friend and her family moved to Alabama. She's from Alabama and she loves that place. They just moved back. But anyway, just last week. There's this man and, his name is, I guess Jamario Howards is his name. And he and his friends were sitting at this little cafe diner kind of place having dinner. And he said that he saw this woman. Her name is Eleanor. She was sitting all by herself. And so he just said, I don't know, it's kind of weird. But he said that my exact thoughts were, dang, I'd hate to have to eat alone. And so he actually went over to her and asked if it was okay if he sat with her. And they got talking together and talking about their lives and everything. And Eleanor told Jamario that she was a widower. And that day that she was there sitting by herself at this restaurant, she said, this would have been my husband's. Her husband has passed away. I guess he's a widower. It would have been our 60th wedding anniversary. And so she says, so I came to this restaurant just to have dinner by myself and to think about my late husband. And he was, this Jamario was like, you know, pretty touched by this story. And so he says, hey, you know, I have two friends over here. I said, okay, if we sit here and have dinner with you so you don't have to sit by yourself. And she said, absolutely. And so anyway, the four of them, sat down and had dinner and visited and just had a good time and talking and everything. And they said that a news crew even got in on this story. And Eleanor said that she believed, this is her quote, she says, I believe God sent me to the restaurant that night so I could be reminded of the kindness of strangers. So that's really nice. And Howards, the guy that, you know, that initially made the contact with her, said that he and his friends already feel like they're her grandkids. And they have vowed to make time for their new surrogate grandma. And it says that they meet at the same restaurant now on a regular basis for dinner and just sit there and chat and catch up on each other's lives and visit and everything. So I think I like that story. That's really nice. But they sat there the first night. They said they sat there for quite a while and just sat there and visited. And she said she really enjoyed the company. And they actually, Jamario and his friends said that it was fun for them and enjoyable for them too. And they were happy to make a new friend. So that was nice. All right. It is break time. So I will, hopefully be able to get my story stuff going and share the stories that I was going to share with you in a few minutes as soon as my producer gets it together and puts me on break. That's your cue. Okay. Here we go.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news.
It's hammer down, just ignore the county line. I've had enough of this old town, we're leaving it behind.
Tune in to The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss it. Join Cope for two full hours of political incorrectness, current events, then talk, and so much more.
looking in. I wouldn't want to be caught here and find out getting old. This old place ain't home, it's just a stop in the rain.
Caramels of old salad, and carry it home at old salad.
Elmer Jones arose at dawn and put his hunting breeches on, then looked at Patty's shotgun on the wall. He made his mind up then and there to bag himself at shooting. He had plenty on the ball. He milked the cow and fed the hog, then kissed his wife, called the dog, picked up his gun and started on his quest. He crossed the creek and hit the trees, threw back his head and sniffed the breeze, let out a yell and pounded on his chest.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
He hunted all the morning through, but not a bear came into view while Elmer's thoughts were on the kitchen range. For he was sick as he could be of lamb and chicken fricassee and craved a mess of bear meat for a change. Poor Elmer's mind was in a fog. He paused and sat down on a log to get his tackle lid back in the groove. He heard a noise, and standing there before him was a grizzly bear, and figured it was time he made his move.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
He grabbed his gun and turned around, but Mr. Bear just stood his ground, and Elmer said, it's either me or thou. The gun refused to go, and so he knew that somebody had to go, and said, farewell, I'm leaving as of now. Elmer's shoulders sprouted wings, his feet developed inner springs. To linger longer, he was disinclined. He ran so fast through muck and mire, his ankles set his socks afire. And still that bear kept coming on behind.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
A deer with antler 8 feet wide got in the way of Elmer's stride as both of them went heading for the brush. Elmer said, now listen, son, if that's the fastest you can run, move over, because I'm really in a rush. The bear was gaining inch by inch and finally reached out for the clinch as Elmer saw the fence around his place. He leaped the fence and landed hard, jumped 60 feet across the yard and slammed the kitchen door in Bruin's face.
Here comes Elmer, Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer, run, bear, run.
The bear was trying to get inside while Elmer sought a place to hide, and Mrs. Jones began to pull her hair. She said, this fuss has got to stop. Why don't you let that matter drop? And Elmer said, honey, you go tell that to the bear. Then Elmer's wife said, listen, goon, how come you think you're Daniel Boone, whose appetite on bear meat used to thrive? He said, I'm sure that you're aware that Daniel always killed his bear, but honey, I done brought this baby home alive.
Here comes Elmer. Elmer's got his gun. Here comes Elmer. Run, bear, run.
Finest dreams I ever knew.
And here's Amy Reynolds with another segment of Living Way Out Here.
Okay, I found my story on war pigeons. I'm going to read some of this because it's pretty interesting, and I don't want to leave anything out. I don't know if I could be able to say it in my own words as well as it is here. But I know pigeons were used for carrying messages back and forth and everything during wars. It says, pigeons have been recorded being used in warfare as far back as the Roman Empire. They can be trained to return to specific locations and are strong enough to carry small messages. Pigeons themselves are capable of incredible physical feats. This I did not know. This is interesting. They can launch themselves to 60 miles per hour from a standstill in just 2 seconds. And are capable of flying hundreds of miles in a matter of hours. They can navigate home from remote and strange locations by detecting the Earth's magnetic fields, making them almost perfectly built for delivering messages on the battlefield. Wow, it's really raining outside right now.
Pouring now.
Yeah. Even after the wow. The wireless radio technology in the 20th century, in the early 20th century, soldiers still insisted on carrying pigeons into both World War I and World War II. Radio may have been practically instantaneous, but it was not yet reliable. Radios were expensive, heavy, delicate, and needed trained operators to work them. On many occasions, a unit of dire need of rescue would be faced with a busted radio and turned to a pigeon as their only means of asking for rescue. Infantrymen would carry pigeons with their wings wrapped in a cloth vest and then clip the birds to their uniforms the way they might attach any other piece of equipment. Messages would then be located and loaded into containers on the bird's leg or into a canister on their back before being set free. Once the bird got its bearing, it headed for the roost it had been trained to receive food and shelter at. A team of communication specialists monitored these roosts at all times, ready to coordinate action on the battlefield. Foot soldiers weren't the only ones to use pigeons. Tanks would often have holes big enough to release pigeons, and even aviators were trained to toss messenger pigeons from their cockpits so that the bird wouldn't get caught in the propeller. After realizing their potential for sending messages, the military tried to find other uses for pigeons. Aerial reconnaissance was still a tricky task with early airplanes, so pigeons were fitted with small microfilm cameras and sent into the air to take photos of enemy territory.
Early drones.
Yeah. These brigades of spy pigeons could take 200 photographs during a single flight and were mostly employed by Germany. Renowned behavioralist B.F. Skinner got in on the pigeon craze during World War II as well. He consulted on a project to produce a pigeon-guided bomb. A bomb would be placed on a glider, then piloted by a pigeon that was trained to fly towards a specific target. While these other eccentric uses for pigeons didn't prove very successful, pigeons were proven messengers. Many pigeons would earn medals throughout the war. A pigeon named Cher Ami received an award, which is an honor shared with legendary American General George S. Patton. So pigeon got the same award as General Patton got. Another pigeon named William of Orange was honored for flying over 250 miles with a distress call that is credited with saving 2,000 soldiers. William made the long journey in just a few short hours, suffering injuries along the way and landing with an injured leg. In total, 32 pigeons have been awarded Dickin medals, the animal equivalent of the Victoria Cross. So I thought that was interesting.
That is neat.
Yeah, that's kind of a neat story there. All right. Now, let me find, I marked it in this book. I don't know if any of you, and if you haven't been to Phoenix, Arizona, then I know that you have heard of Phoenix, Arizona and the heat that Phoenix, Arizona has. Well, there's this, it's very hot there. And from probably June to September, the temperatures can easily pass the 100 mark.
Well, it was 97 the other day in April.
Yeah, it's actually it was 102 there the other day too. I heard on the radio. So that's early.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Phoenix already. So this is early. So Phoenix is going to have a very hot, miserable summer, I think. But
again,
yeah. But there's a lot of people that like. There's a lot of neat hiking places in Arizona. And there's a lot that I would like to go on this.
Well, in Phoenix, you're going by yourself.
Season, but I won't be going in Phoenix. Yeah, but there's a mountain in Phoenix. Some of you might have heard it. Some of you might have climbed it. It's called Camelback Mountain, and it is a 1.3-mile trek to the top of this mountain, and a lot of people like to climb it just to say that they have done it. I know a couple of people that have done it, and they said it's pretty strenuous, get your attention. Well, on the way up to the top of Camelback, there are signs along the trail that are like warning signs. There's a sign that says extremely difficult, and then if you keep going, you're going to come to a checklist of what you should have if you're going to continue. To be careful, if you're going to, you need to continue. And one of them says you need to have at least a liter of water per person. And they don't suggest you hike by yourself. That's always a bad thing anyway, no matter which, where you're hiking. But don't go by yourself. But then they said, if that's not going to, this checklist, including the water, 1 liter of water per person, if this doesn't deter you and you keep going, there's another sign that's a little bit farther up. And it says, quote, if you're halfway through your water, turn around, end quote. There's a lot of people that see these signs, they read them, but they don't
take them serious.
Yeah, they don't take these signs seriously, and they should. So there is a man that lives in Phoenix. I guess that's where he lives. His name is Scott Cullimore, and he does take these warnings seriously. So he runs a carpet cleaning company in Mesa, which is not far from Phoenix at all. He's 53 years old. And they say that during those months when a lot of people hike up this hill, up this mountain, Camelback, he hikes it up and down a couple of times a day, giving out cold water bottles to worn out hikers. He carries on his back an insulated backpack, and he says if he comes across somebody that's their face is really flushed and they're not sweating anymore, he said that's the first sign. If you stop sweating, there's a problem. You're dehydrated. And so he just takes out a cold bottle of water from his insulated backpack and gives it to the person that's having a tough time. He said that he has helped hydrate so many hikers that he has earned a nickname of the Water Angel. And his quote is, he says, I'd like a little bit more manly name, but I guess this is okay too. He says it could be a little more manly. That would be nice. And the reason why he's doing this is that one day he was up on Camelback, and this was in 2015, and a British tourist died after being lost for nearly 6 hours up there in July. Now, in July in Phoenix, that would be probably, 111, 115, something like that. And he was lost. This guy was lost for 6 hours. They did finally find him, and he had died. But so that experience, he said that's what inspired him to start helping people that were caught unaware by Arizona's unforgiving version of Mother Nature. He says they underestimate the mountain and they overestimate what they can do, and they get themselves in trouble. So anyway, he says that he loves doing it. He buys us money buys us water with his own money. He doesn't expect to be paid for it, doesn't expect anyone to pay him for it. He says he's just out there helping people. He says, I'm not looking for any help. I just want to help people. And he says it's kind of misleading because this mountain is actually in the middle of the city, and people don't realize because you have all this, this city down there, but he says people don't realize that you can actually die up here, and no one would even know, because it's, especially if you're hiking by yourself, you shouldn't do it. One of the hikers that he came across one time, and he had given him some water, he says, you think you know the heat, but then you get out here in the desert, and it surrounds you like a blanket. And that is true. That's
electric blanket.
Yeah, on high. But I haven't climbed Camelback, and I don't know if I'm one of those people. I don't think I need those bragging rights to say that I've done it. I don't really care. But I have been in Phoenix in the summer, and it's stifling. In fact, I was there one time. I was going to be flying into Washington, so I had driven down to Phoenix and was staying in a hotel because my flight was early the next morning, and Phoenix is the closest big airport to us. So I had gotten out, parked my car in the parking lot of the hotel, and this was probably about 11 o'clock at night, 10:30, 11, something like that. I got out of my car, and it was so hot at that time. It's like, you have got to be kidding me. So I walked into the hotels, nice and cool in there, and the front desk guy says, hey, welcome to wherever I was staying. I don't even know. He says, welcome to wherever. How you doing? And I said, how do you people live down here? I said, it is almost midnight and it's so hot. And he says, you know, in the dead of summer, he said, it is well over 100 degrees at midnight.
So back to my original question.
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell are you doing here?
Yeah. So, but he, you know what he says? Oh, but it's so pretty in the fall.
It's a dry heat.
Or is it ever?
You retard.
He says, oh, but it's so pretty in the fall, which I've heard it is. Okay, the desert is gorgeous in the fall. However, probably I'm thinking in Phoenix, the fall probably lasts 45 minutes because it is so hot. But anyway, back to this, what's his name? Water Angel? Yeah, the Water Angel, this guy. Anyway, he says that he just does it to...
Duncan Kent said it could be Angel better than Fairy.
That's true.
Fairy. Hey, here comes the Water Fairy.
That's too fucking cat. Yeah, I guess it could be worse than the Water Fairy. I mean, the Water Angel. But this one guy was who said that the heat surrounds you like a blanket. In the he was hiking with his high school friend, and he said, we were really happy that this guy came with the water. He says, we consider him a good Samaritan, he says, because we were having a hard time. And so he doesn't say much. He just walks up to people and says, here, I think you can use some water. And he gives them the water. And then he moves on and goes and finds other hikers to help them out. So anyway, I think that's a nice story. How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. I'll try to do this pretty quick. Cope and I have always talked about we would love to go treasure hunting.
I don't want to go treasure hunting. I just want to go out there, pick it up, and come home.
And we just like fantasize about this and how fun it would be because I love to explore stuff. Love it. And I like to just find things and it's just something I love. Well, there's a man who has buried a treasure. And I don't know if you guys have known about this story. I think this has been out for a while. I'm not positive. I just now heard about it. And it's kind of a long story, and I'm not going to be able to say much, but I would like...
You got time. You still 10 minutes.
Anyway, this man, let's see... Forrest Finn is his name. He's 88 years old. He's a retired antiques dealer from New Mexico. And he said that, let's see, let me try to paraphrase this. He and his wife ran a high-end gallery in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And they had got all this, their personal collection was, they had amazing stuff. They had like Sitting Bull's original peace pipe. They had a mummified falcon from King Tut's tomb. Well, that's the kind of stuff that they had. And they had all kinds of things, but that's just a few. But in 1988, he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And so he came with a crazy scheme that he wanted to do before he died, that he was going to bury some of his favorite artifacts somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. And then he wanted to die next to them. He says, quote, my desire was to hide the treasure and let my body stay there and go back to the soil. end quote. Well, he ended up beating the cancer. And so he put this treasure idea on hold for two decades until it was his 80th birthday. And then he decided to finally go through with it again. And so he says that he filled an antique bronze lockbox measuring 10 inches by 10 inches with hundreds of treasures. There's gold coins, gold nuggets, rubies, diamonds, emeralds, Chinese jade carvings, and pre-Columbian gold bracelets. He said the contents are worth somewhere between $1 million and $5 million, based on the estimates that he was given over the years. And then he took his treasure chest out into the Rockies and he hid it. It has not been found. He wants it to be found. He said that's the whole point, but he doesn't want to just give it away. People need to work for it. He said this country was going into recession and people were losing their jobs and despair was a headline in every paper. I wanted to give some hope to those who were willing to go into the mountains looking for a treasure. So in 2010, he self-published his memoir called The Thrill of the Chase. So, and in this book, it's got stories about his adventures that he's had as an Air Force pilot and selling moccasins to the Rockefellers. It includes a 24-line, in this book, it includes a 24-line poem that he claims contains 9 clues that will lead to the end of my rainbow and the treasure. Okay, so now at first nobody really cared. They didn't really notice. The Thrill of the Chase was sold only in local a local New Mexico bookstore. It's the only place it was sold. But word spread as that kind of stuff gets around. And by 2011, there was a small community of determined hunters. Once the media told of this, Fenn's story, the chase was on. Get this. The book is now out of print. And copies show up on Amazon every once in a while for as much as $3,200. So Fenn estimates that 350,000 people from across the globe have searched or are currently searching for his treasure, yet nobody has found it. He says, the problem with Fenn's poem, or perhaps because the poem, like I said, is inside this, and I actually have a copy of the poem here, so I'm going to read it to you. It says, the problem with his poem, or the reason why it has become such an obsession, is that the clues can be interpreted a million different ways. For example, home of Brown, for instance, that could be Brown's Canyon National Monument in Colorado, or Brown's Cemetery in Montana, or Brown Hill in New Mexico, or a cabin or a bear. Maybe it's a color brown, or maybe the treasure is hidden under some porta potties. And they said actually people have actually looked under there, thinking that's what the brown means. They have looked under porta potties for this. But it says that the treasure has attracted an eclectic bunch of hunters, including Tim Nobody, who collects pinball machines, a one-legged motorcycle rider named Michael Hendrickson, and a Connecticut woman everybody calls Grandma. There's a man, his name is Dal, he's 72, he manages a community cable TV station in Bellingham, Washington, and he has taken about 70 road trips in search of the treasure. He runs a blog named Thrill the Chase that has become an online hub for hunters to post theories about where Fenn might have stashed all that gold. He gets thousands of visitors a day. But there's another woman, her name is Marty, and she's from Blue Ridge, Georgia. She's better known by her handle, which is Diggin' Gypsy. And she searches an average of 7 times a year for weeks at a time looking for this treasure. She's 49 years old. She's usually joined by her extended family and her pet rooster, which is named John Wayne. But she said she only searches in West Yellowstone, Montana, no longer bothering with Wyoming, Colorado, or New Mexico. The other three mountain states, she says, where the treasure might be hidden. She says it's because Finn once blogged about her, claiming, "If I were a betting man, I'd bet on this woman." That could be used as a clue. But anyway, that woman, so she said, just him saying that, she thinks she's on the right track. But there's several people that are looking. As she says, she's hardly the only optimist. The truly devoted meet in June for an annual gathering in New Mexico called Fenbury. And since 2014, when only 10 people attended, it has grown to become a hot ticket with hundreds mingling around campfires and sharing stories. So there's more to the story. Some people beg him, says, "You know what? Can you just give away any additional clues?" And his, what he says, "It's all in the poem." It's all he would tell people. "It's all in the poem." So, let's see. So here's his million-dollar riddle. I'm going to read. What time is it? So here's his million-dollar riddle, and that's what's called Forrest Finn's million-dollar riddle. "As I have gone alone in there, and with my treasures bold, I can keep my secret where and hint of riches new and old. Begin it where warm waters halt, and take it in the canyon down, not far but too far to walk. Put it below the home of Brown." Brown is capitalized, so it's a name. "From there it's no place for the meek. The end is ever drawing nigh. There'll be no paddle up your creek, just heavy loads and water high. If you've been wise and found the blaze, look quickly down, your quest to cease. But tarry scant with marvel gaze, just take the chest and go in peace. So why is it I must go and leave my trove for all to seek? The answers I already know. I've done it tired, and now I'm weak. So hear me all and listen good. Your effort will be worth the cold. If you are brave and in the wood, I give you title to the gold." That's his poem. He says there's 9 clues. If you can decipher those 9 clues, you will know where that treasure is hidden. And some people have said that the clues have revealed that the treasure isn't in a mine. And he says, I mean, they have snakes in them, so why would I put them in a mine, or it's not in a tunnel? Some people say that it's between 5,000 and 10,200 feet above sea level. It's not in Canada or Idaho or Utah or in a graveyard. So they're thinking they're deciphering it little by little. It says where warm waters halt. So they're saying it's not a dam and it's not on top of any mountain, though it may be close to the top. So people, there's, like they said, like I said earlier, lots and lots of ways to decipher this. But I think it's kind of neat. There's a more, I might even talk more on this next week, I'm not sure, but there's a bigger, longer story to this. But anyway, that is, I believe, my time up. Okay, my time is up. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I will be back next week, which will be sometime in May, if you can believe that already. All right, thanks, guys. Good night. That's my show for this evening. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, amid all the turmoil out there, there are still good things going on. I hope something I shared with you tonight gave you a reason to smile. See you next week.
Girl.